Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Q2 FY18 earnings conference call of Glenmark Pharmaceuticals Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star and then zero on your touch-tone telephone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Jason D'Souza. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Inba. Good morning. Welcome to Glenmark's Q2 earnings call. Before we begin the call, I would like to introduce the members of Glenmark. We have with us Mr. Glenn Saldanha, Chairman and Managing Director, Glenmark Pharmaceuticals Limited. We have with us Robert Mastick, President, North America and Global API. Mr. P. Ganesh, President and Chief Financial Officer. And we have the new incoming Chief Financial Officer, Mr. V.S. Pani. Before we start the call, I would like to make a quick introduction of Mr. V.S. Pani. So Glenmark is pleased to announce that Mr. V.S. Pani joins us as President and Global Chief Financial Officer effective November 16, 2017. In this role, Mr. Pani will lead the finance function of the company globally. Mr. Pani is a qualified chartered accountant with over 25 years experience in the corporate world. In his career span, he has over 20 years of experience in the pharmaceutical industry and has held various leadership positions, including the CFO of Cipla Limited for a number of years. During the last 15 years, Mr. Pani has always been part of the core leadership team of various large Indian organizations. Glenmark also announced yesterday that its current President and Global Chief Financial Officer, Mr. P. Ganesh, has resigned and will leave the organization with effect from close of working hours on November 15, 2017. He will shortly be joining a leading consumer goods company. We wish him the very best for the future. With this, we will start with Glenmark's Q2 earnings call. Before we begin, a brief on the other regions, I would request Bob Mastick to give us a quick overview of the U.S. business. Over to you, Bob.
Thank you, Jason, and thanks, everyone, for joining us today. The North American finished dosage form business, which includes Canada and the U.S., closed the second quarter with revenues of $113.24 million, a decrease of 5.72%, which was $115.33 million a year ago. The forecast for Q3 is to be greater than $125 million. On the approval side, the U.S. was granted 8 final approvals in Q2. They were as follows: amlodipine and olmesartan medoxamil tablets, 5 mg/20 mg, 5 mg/40 mg, 10 mg/20 mg, and 10 mg/40 mg. Besonide cream, 0.05%, acyclovir ointment, 5%, triamcinolone acetonide ointment, 0.1%, propafenone hydrochloride extended release capsules, 225 mg, 325 mg, and 425 mg. Desonide ointment, 0.05%. Nitroglycerin sublingual tablets, 0.3 mg, 0.4 mg, and 0.6 mg. And finally, desonide lotion, 0.05%. In total, we have 17 ANDA approvals year-to-date, with one Canadian approval and 16 U.S. approvals in the last two quarters. Three of the U.S. approvals are tentative approvals. The company also filed 3 ANDA applications within the U.S. FDA this quarter and plans to file an additional 7 applications in the forthcoming quarter. Glenmark's marketing portfolio through September 30, 2017, consists of 127 generic products authorized for distribution in the U.S. market. The company currently has 60 applications pending in various stages of the approval process with the U.S. FDA, of which 28 are Paragraph 4 applications. From an in-licensing perspective, during the quarter, Glenmark entered into a development, license, manufacturer, and commercial supply agreement with Syndeia Pharma SL, granting exclusive rights to use their technology for developing generic, soft gel and capsule formulations of certain pharmaceutical products. Under this agreement, Glenmark receives exclusive rights to the U.S. and Canada markets for these soft gelatin formulations in exchange for sharing development costs and profits from future sales. In addition, the agreement provides for the companies to add further soft gelatin product candidates for development and commercialization as new branded soft gelatin capsule-based drug products become available in the marketplace. From a marketplace perspective, we want to make note of several things. First, price erosion for the quarter edged up to 13% from the previous 10 to 12% guidance. This was primarily due to the ongoing consolidation of purchasers. As an industry, the business will continue to be a challenging environment for at least the next 2 years. On the political front, despite ongoing price erosion in our business as well as those of many of other generic manufacturers, we continue to see more state initiatives to regulate pricing and or implement price transparency. We continue to believe that generic drugs are the solution, not the problem, to today's pharmaceutical market cost problems within the U.S. To manage these challenges, we continue to pursue growth by diversifying our portfolio into complex generics, specialty branded products, and innovative products. Now for the active pharmaceutical ingredients business. Revenue from the sale of API to regulated and semi-regulated markets globally was ₹2366.14 million for the second quarter ended September 30, 2017, against ₹2213.41 million for the previous corresponding quarter, recording an increase of 6.90%. During the second quarter, Glenmark filed two U.S. DMFs and one EU CEP, and completed several other regulatory filings in other key markets, including Brazil and South Korea. The sales were contributed mainly by perindopril, lercanapine, etoricoxib, adapalene, and amiodarone. And now I'll hand it back to Jason. Thank you.
Thanks, Bob. We'll complete the update for the remaining regions on the innovative business. So on the India side, the India business turnover of about 7106 million, recording growth of 5.3%. As per IMS September 2017, Glenmark Pharmaceuticals is ranked 13th with market share of 2.27%. Glenmark remains one of the top three fastest growing companies as per IMS data. Glenmark recorded an increase in market share in all its core segments, namely cardiac, antidiabetic, respiratory, and derma. The India revenue numbers for the previous year includes excise, and for this quarter of the financial year, the revenue reported is net of GST. Thus, on a like-to-like basis, the India business has grown by around 8% in the second quarter of the financial year. During the second quarter, the market was still recovering post the implementation of GST. The Africa, Asia, and CIS region had a challenging second quarter, recording a decrease of 0.69% at ₹2520 million. During the second quarter, the Glenmark's Russia secondary sales recorded degrowth of 0.14%. Glenmark, however, as per IMS data, Glenmark ranks 40 as compared to 44 in the previous year at August 16, sustaining Glenmark's position among the top 40 companies in the retail segment in the Russian pharmaceutical market. During the second quarter, the Asia region recorded secondary sales growth was just 1%, with most subsidiaries posting an average performance in the second quarter. In the Africa region for the second quarter, Glenmark recorded growth in this region. Europe formulations. The Europe revenues was at $2,000.24 million, recording an increase of 48.50%. The Western European region recorded good growth during the quarter. Glenmark launched 7 products in the UK, 2 products in Germany, 4 in Netherlands, 1 in Poland, Sweden, and Finland each. During the quarter, we expanded our footprint to the Nordic region in Europe. We launched buprenorphine in Sweden and won the tender for desloratadine and escitalopram. During the quarter, Glenmark was granted final approval by MHRA for Maalox Protect, an anti-malarial medication, as a pharmacy license in the United Kingdom. Maalox Protect contains atovaquone and fluconazole hydrochloride and has been available only as a prescription medicine in the UK. Under this approval, this is the first approval of the molecule as OTC, wherein patients will be able to purchase Maalox Protect without a prescription. The Central Eastern European region also recorded secondary sales growth of 26% during the quarter. The Czech and the Polish subsidiary performed well during the quarter. The Latin American region. Glenmark's revenue from its Latin American and Caribbean operations was at $1047 million. recording a decline of 21.73%. As Venezuela sales is present in the second quarter of the previous financial year, this has resulted in sales declining for the LATAM region in the second quarter. The LATAM region, excluding Venezuela, recorded growth in excess of 20% in constant currency during the second quarter. The Brazilian subsidiary recorded growth of 14% and the Mexico subsidiary recorded growth of 70% on a much smaller base. And now on the innovative pipeline. In the innovative research and development pipeline, there are a number of highlights from the quarter that we are pleased to share with you today. As you may be aware, the company has 9 NME pipeline assets, including 3 NCEs and 6 NVEs in various stages of development, focused on 3 core therapeutic areas: oncology, dermatology, and respiratory. I will begin with the oncology pipeline asset. The leading candidates from our proprietary BEAT platform, GBR1302, a HER2-CD3 bispecific antibody, a potential treatment for HER2-positive cancers, is actively enrolling patients in Phase 1 first-in-human study to determine the maximum tolerated dose in patients with HER2-positive cancers. Clinical sites are open in Europe and the U.S. Dose escalation continues and several additional sites are slated to open in November 2017. The study is currently recruiting HER2-positive patients in Cohort 7. So far, 21 patients have been screened and 15 patients, including patients with gastric cancer, bladder cancer, and breast cancer, have been dosed. In addition, GBR1302 interim biomarker data and preclinical data is expected to be presented at a medical meeting in CY 2018. Our second oncology candidate from our BEAT platform in development is GBR1342. GBR1342 is a CD38 CD3 bispecific antibody targeting CD38, a clinically proven target in multiple myeloma and other malignancies of hematopoietic origin. The IND was cleared by the FDA in May of this year, and the company has initiated Phase 1 study startup initiatives with the goal to determine maximum tolerated dose. The first U.S. site has been initiated, and the first patient first visit occurred on October 25, 2017, with dosing expected to begin early in November 2017. Glenmark is also evaluating GBR1342 for solid tumors. For our last two oncology candidates, including GBR1372 and EGFR-CD3 bispecific antibody based on the BEAT platform targeting epidermal growth factor receptor, a proven target in several cancers including squamous cell carcinoma of the head and neck, lung cancer, and colorectal cancer. And GBR8383, a new type of highly potent OX40R antibody-based agonist, which generates optimal T-cell responses through co-stimulation of the TNFR superfamily members like OX40, may lead to enhanced activity against a variety of tumors. Preclinical studies are ongoing for both, and we will provide updates as and when they become available. Looking at the innovative dermatology pipeline, the company's candidate, which is GBR830, an anti-OX40R monoclonal antibody, was discovered at Glenmark's Biological Research Center in Switzerland and is in clinical development by Glenmark US. The molecular target for GBR830 to inhibit pathologically activated T cells and effector memory T cells, which are involved in a variety of autoimmune and chronic inflammatory disorders. The lead indication being evaluated for GBR830 is moderate to severe atopic dermatitis. Glenmark recently reported on a major milestone at the end of July in this year with a first look at promising results from a Phase 2A study of GBR830 relative to placebo in adults with moderate to severe atopic dermatitis with history of inadequate response to topical therapies. In the study, 17 out of 23 patients treated with GBR830 demonstrated a greater than 50% reduction in eczema area and severity index score. While not powered for statistical difference, data from this study suggested GBR830 demonstrated clinically meaningful improvements of symptoms that was continuous and sustained, with consistency observed between biological and clinical response. The overall safety profile for GBR830 was similar to placebo in the study. Glenmark has submitted these data for presentations at the American Academy of Dermatology annual meeting taking place in February 2018. Based on the results of this Phase 2A study, we are firmly committed to advancing GBR830 and expect to start the Phase 2B in U.S. and Europe in Q1 of FY19. Glenmark also intends to initiate a Phase 2A study in patients with lupus nephritis in Q1 FY2019. Glenmark is targeting the BLA filing for GBR830 in FY22. And on the respiratory candidates which are under development, last week we presented new data supporting GSP301 at the American College of Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology annual meeting. GSP301 is our investigational drug combination of a steroid and an antihistamine administered intranasally for the treatment of seasonal allergic rhinitis in adults and children. We are excited that GSP301 is on track to be the company's first NDA submission to the US FDA. We expect to file for approval of GSP301 in Q1 of calendar year 2018. GSP304 is the company's long-acting muscarinic antagonist for the administration by nebulization for the treatment of the once-daily treatment of bronchospasm associated with COPD. Data from the PK and safety studies are currently being analyzed, and we will provide an update as and when available. GSP301 phase 2B studies, which are currently underway, Glenmark hopes to initiate phase 3 studies in FY19. And finally, our biosimilar candidate for Xolair, GBR310, for the treatment of asthma and chronic idiopathic urticaria or hives is in phase 1 development, with 62 patients currently enrolled. GBR310 has the potential to become the first biosimilar candidate to be submitted for approval for respiratory or allergic disease in the U.S. Before we begin the Q&A, I would like to read some notes from the financials. For the 6 months ended September 30, 2017, gross debt was at INR 4848 crores, which includes 350 crores of current portion in long-term borrowings, which is sitting in other financial assets. Net debt as on September 30, 2017 was at 3498 crores, a reduction of INR 169 crores as on March 31, 2017. On a constant currency, the net debt has fallen by 194 crores. However, we would like to state that we have around 110 crores of near-term payments coming up, and thus the free cash flow for the first 6 months will be around 60 crores and 85 crores in constant currency. The free cash flow is ahead of our guidance that we stated for the first 6 months, which was that net debt will, at a constant currency, will be the same as net debt as on March 31, 2017. The R&D expenditure for the quarter was around INR 267 crores, which was 11.8% of sales. For the first half of the financial year, the R&D expenditure was 522 crores, which is around 11.3% to net sales. The R&D expenditure for the year 17-18 will be lower in absolute numbers as compared to the last financial year. Inventory was at 2159 crores, which was 82 days as compared to 87 days in March 2017. Receivables was at 2516 crores, which was at 96 days as compared to 98 days in March 2017. Payables was at 2042 crores, which was at 78 days as compared to 77 days in March 2017. Total asset addition was at INR 420 crores, of which 320 crores was fixed asset addition, 90 crores was expenditure on brands in-licensed in US and Europe, and 10 crores was software development. Cash tax for the first 6 months was at 180 crores. Reported tax for the first half was at 23.6% to PBT. For the full year, we remain committed to reduce debt on a constant currency by at least 250 to 300 crores excluding out-licensing income as compared to March 31, 2017. R&D as a percentage of sales will be around 11% to overall revenues. During the first half, we reported a net profit of 547 crores, of which the addition to equity was 521 crores. With this, I would like to open the floor for question and answers. Over to you, Inba.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on your touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Our first question is from the line of Prakash Agarwal of Axis Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity and good morning. First question on the U.S. business, we see 2Q last year is about 115 and this year is about 113. I understand we had good approvals like Statera and at the late we had another good approval. Also, we would have some tailwinds of Zitia. So, just trying to understand how big has been the impact of Claris One, A, and do we see this run rate improving, and how is the launch pipeline looking? Thanks.
Bob, you want to take that?
Yeah, sure. So I think the first, a couple of our key approvals came in late in Q2, so we're anticipating you see the effect of those in Q3. As far as Claris One goes, we're seeing ongoing challenges like we had mentioned, but, I think our erosion rate is our erosion rate, and, we didn't see, per se, too much impact from that in Q2. And I'm not sure what the final question was, if you could repeat it.
Yeah, in terms of, YOY growth is flattish despite these approvals. You said this coming at the fag end of the quarter. So that's some more clarity there. And secondly, what is the launch pipeline looking, especially for products like Voltaren and Epiduo?
Yeah, we don't comment on specific products. I mean, we're making progress towards, getting those approved, but we can't guide to specific dates.
So, Prakash, we've said that Q3, will be much stronger than Q2, right? And we're saying, we expect Q3 to be in excess of 125 million, right, from the current Q2 numbers. So I think, from a trend perspective, the U.S. business continues to look stronger for us, right, quarter over quarter. And going forward, it will just keep going strength from strength.
And have you factored in any other approvals in this 125 million? I mean, or is it the run rate of the older products which you approved and launched which will take this number forward?
This is the older products, Prakash. So it's the existing, whatever is approved thus far, right, will give us that 125 plus million.
Okay. And this is after the impact of all the Claris One. There's no surprise there, basically.
Absolutely.
Perfect. Great. That's good to know. And secondly, on the other expenses, there is a significant drop. If you could just help us understand what is driving this, is it some cost rationalization, cost optimization, and how do we look it forward?
Yeah, so on the other expenditures, there are a couple of points. One, in the previous regime, till 13th of June, we had excise duty which was sitting in other expenditure. Now in a GST environment, the sales gets reported net of GST. So that's one change. The other one is, selling expenses have been on the lower side, but having said that, we will also see some amount of uptake in the later quarters as sales also picks up. Then beyond that, there is some amount of moderation in SG&A line, which is something we are controlling very tightly.
No, sir, but it's a decline, sir. So if you can quantify what's the excise,
it's about 25 to 30 crore.
Yeah, but still, if I even adjust for that, that's still a big decline. It's not, muted or flattish. It's a big decline. So there has been a conscious effort. So how do we, you're saying with sales improving, you will see this. So is it related to promotional expenses?
Expenses, yes, will go up with increase in sales in the later quarter. So we'll see some uptick on that front. But on an overall basis, excise is something which is permanent. So you will not see that anymore in this line. And beyond that, as I mentioned, the entire SG&A line is also something we are very tightly monitoring at this point in time, which is why on that part there will be some amount of moderation.
Right. And lastly, on GBR 830, so congrats on the positive data. How do we see the out-licensing scenario now? I mean, we have talked about there's at least one in out-licensing that we'll see. So this is by far the most promising as per you?
Yeah, I think so, Prakash. However, we are in active discussions with several partners. Okay, so we'll see how it plays out. But clearly, this is the most promising in the pipeline from an out-licensing perspective.
And you maintain that at least one would go out of your stable in terms of out-licensing?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you. All the best.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, you may press star and one on your touchtone telephone. We'll take a next question from the line of Kumar Saurabh from Motilal Oswal Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my question. Sir, again, you know, just to ponder on the cost rationalization effort. So if we exclude that one-time employee expense of around 1.1 billion INR, our EBITDA is almost similar to, you know, 1Q FY18 EBITDA, which included Zetia sales as well. So how should we look at, you know the 2Q FY18 numbers and what kind of cost rationalization efforts, if at all, we have taken, has come through?
So look, I think from a cost perspective, there's an increased focus on, as Ganesh mentioned, right, both in the SG&A line item as well as, you know, your selling expenses and various things, right? We've done a lot of work in these areas, right, to rationalize costs. And I think, you know, that will be pretty much something that you will continue to see, I would say, over the next year or 2 years in terms of improving our overall effectiveness, right, in both, I mean, in terms of our expenditure. So that is something you will continue to see going forward.
So, Saurabh, the other thing is you rightly mentioned there is a 110 crores one-time employee cost that is there in the manpower cost for the second quarter, and that that amount will not come in Q3 onwards. So your assumption for the next two quarters is correct.
So Jason, you know, so
can you speak a little louder, Saurav? We can't hear you.
Yeah. Is it better now?
Yeah, this is better.
Yeah. So I'm saying that so quarter over quarter, so excluding that, you know, one-time bonus, so then if we adjust for Zetia, there is a more than 200 crore kind of savings. So how should we, and so what, when we are saying that, you know, selling cost and all has come down, is it like that marketing cost we have brought down drastically, and should, will it have any impact on sales going forward?
So we don't anticipate, in fact, I mean, our major geographies, we expect Q3 to be much stronger than Q2. I mean, if you look at particularly in geographies like Europe, we expect Q over Q good growth coming through. US, we've already talked about, right? So we don't anticipate any significant impact on the overall sales, right, on account of whatever cost rationalization that we're doing.
But, Saurabh, the thing is that there has been a very clear-cut conscious focus on cost rationalization, and we have looked at that across region, across markets.
Okay. Okay. And then, you know, well, lastly, how should we look at EBITDA margins going forward, given the fact that, you, as you said, that, you know, in most of the geographies, we will see growth quarter over quarter as well as year over year. So then, how should we, where we should end FY18 in terms of margin?
Well, on a full year, we still maintain we will be between around 21 and 22%, somewhere thereabouts, at the EBITDA level, on a constant currency, right?
Okay, okay, fair enough. Thanks a lot. These are my questions.
Thank you. Anyone who has a question may press star and one. Our next question is from the line of Anubhav Agarwal from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi guys. Morning. Glenn, one question on GSP301. Based on the trial data that you have, roughly, how much premium you think you can command over the individual products which are in the market? I'm just trying to get a rough sense. Can we price our product 50% higher, 20% higher, 100% higher? Some sense will be useful because that will give us some sense to model this in terms of margins for the product.
So I think, look, I can't give you a pricing strategy, but all I can say is, you know, the closest competitor to 301 is Dymesta, right? And Dymesta is about $160+ million in sales as per IMS, right? The other thing you want to keep in mind is 301 has tremendous potential, particularly on the OTC side of the business eventually, right? You've got Flonase, you know, you've got competitors like Flonase, you've got competitors like Nasocort. They're all $400-500 million products. So I think 301 will, while the primary focus is to get this launched in the US next year, we will also be able to, have significant gains coming out of 301 in the rest of the world, multiple other regulated markets, including markets like Japan, Australia, and some of the other emerging markets, right, where these kind of products are very exciting. So I think there's a multi-pronged strategy behind 301, right, which will, I think, starting next, towards the end of next year, it will start kicking in, right, and it will play out over 3-4 years.
So just to understand, you're saying that from a pricing perspective, the benchmark will be dimester here and not individual holopetadine or mometasone here?
Correct.
Okay, sure. See, second question was on the balance sheet, actually. So we see a very high cash in books right now, almost $200 million plus, which is like, if I see some, you know, just to put in context, the cash on the books right now is 15% of sales and almost 2x of our annual capex. And this cash has, $200 million has increased by $50 million in just one quarter. Why are you keeping so much cash, and which is all funded through debt, which is incurring very high cost of 6-7%?
So, Anubhav, we just mentioned that around 110 to 120 crores is what we need near-term payments, and as a result, you know, that is something that needs to be excluded from the cash component. But the rest is basis the business. You know, I think this is something that we send, and this is basis the business that we need this kind amount of cash, and we have seen this during the first 6 months of this financial year.
But Jason, why do you need so much cash? Even if we exclude $15 million. Or let's say $20 million payment that you need to do, still $200 million cash, 15% of sales, which company keeps so much cash on the balance sheet?
So again, as part of our corporate policy, we have been consistently maintaining 1,000 crore plus of cash. And as what Jason mentioned, is that about 120 odd crore of payments, which were lined up in the early part of October, is what you are also seeing in the 30th September of balance sheet.
Okay. So you mean to say that we should take that 1,000 crore cash will not reduce in absolute terms from here? That's the sustainable number for us.
Ballpark, it will be fair to estimate that about 1,000 crore of cash would be maintained on an ongoing basis.
Okay. And Ganesh, can you also explain, just I couldn't understand this. If I look sequentially in the September quarter versus the June quarter, based on the profits that you guys have reported, even accounting with the cash tax rate, it seems that your cash flow from operations should be enough to service your working capital increase as well as the capex. But still, debt has increased by almost like 130, 140 crore in this quarter. What has led to that debt increase in this quarter?
So this was actually a loan which was taken where there was a prior commitment to make a drawdown.
I'm sorry, your voice was very feeble. I couldn't hear that.
So this is a prior committed drawdown which was done.
On the second quarter,
if you look at it specifically, Anubhav, there is a 262 crores of capex that has come in. So if you were to plot the Q2 numbers, you will realize that one is that the reported EBITDA is much lower than Q1. You have a cash tax also element that is therein, and third is that the capex as we reported, the total asset that we reported was about 450 crores, of which 260 crores came in the second quarter, as well as there was some increase on account of working capital. And this is as compared to Q1.
How much is the cash flow from operation 2Q?
It's around 200.
About 250 to 275 crores.
That's exactly my point. So Jason, if you add up your numbers, 260 crore capex, working capital increase about 60 crore, that's 320 crore. You generate about 260 crore in cash, and your debt level is increasing by 140 crore. So extra 100 crore is coming for some purpose which I don't understand.
No, but Anubhav, the one thing that is very clear is that you have the 6 months numbers, and you will see in the 6 months numbers also there is an increase of about 100 crores in other current assets. So if you plot the numbers from a 6 month basis, you will get all the explanations that is there in the balance sheet.
I think we should move to the next question.
Sure, sir. Before we take our next question, we would like to remind participants to ask a question. You may press star and one. Our next question is from the line of Aditya Khemka from DSP BlackRock. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for the opportunity. Jason, to help me remember, do we have any portion of our convertible debt maturing anytime soon? If yes, what is the conversion price and what is the quantum of the debt that is maturing?
No, we don't have any convertible debt maturing soon. The only the FCCB is maturing in 2021, if I'm right.
FCCB is maturing in 2021, so there is no portion of convertible debt maturing anytime soon.
Correct.
Okay. And in terms of the normal debt, so not non-convertible debt, how much of it is due to be paid this financial year, FY18?
So if you look at the current portion of long-term debt, which is included in other financial liabilities, that's an amount of 350.
350, is it? I could not get the number. Is it 350?
It's 350.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. Thanks for that. And lastly, Glenn, on the emerging market front, so Latin America and all the other emerging markets that we have seen, since the oil rally, the currencies have relatively, you know, strengthened, compared to 6 months ago. How is the pricing behaving in those markets? So I understand when the currency broke down, we sort of took the hit on our profitability and we could not increase prices. And now that the currency is back up, how is the pricing behaving in those emerging markets?
So I think, EMs continue to do well, right? Despite, the numbers are not reflective of the real growth in the market. Unfortunately, I think, rest of the world markets this time was driven mainly by Russia, you know, the season not being great, right? And we're facing pressure on one of our products called Oflamil, right, which is a nail lacquer. So, but otherwise, if you take, EMs as a whole, the in-market growth continues to be strong. I mean, even markets like Brazil, Mexico, all this, if you strip out the Venezuela effect, right, they're all growing at double-digit growth rates. You know. So I think overall, EMs continue to be strong. The pricing environment also continues to be very stable, right, I think as a whole. I mean, again, the biggest risk to EM is always currency, right? I mean, that's the one aspect which is unpredictable. But if you keep things at a constant currency basis, the in-market growth is very strong.
Okay. Thanks for that. I'll get back in the queue.
Sure.
Thank you. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one. Our next question is from the line of Ashish Rathi from Darsh Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for the opportunity and congrats on a good quarter. Wanted to understand the overall guidance. Basically, we have 2H in the 2H we had Zetia last year. And one as we have seen kind of a 10% top-line growth. So what kind of growth should we expect for full year?
So our initial guidance was 8 to 10%. Obviously, we are right now at the lower end of the band. If you adjust for the currency effect, if you adjust for the GST impact, right, the excise impact, all that, right? So overall, we should be, somewhere close to about 8% on a constant currency basis and adjusting for GST and some of the changes that have happened.
Because, we had, even if I build what you said, like $125-$130 million in US in 3Q, we'll still be like a 30% decline YOY in the US. So does that 8% and the first half is only 10%. So we are actually trying to, Does it not sound like a bit too optimistic, 8%? Could there be downside to that?
So 8% is on a constant currency basis, right? If you adjust for currency and the GST impact and GST, right, it will be more like 6-7%, on a full year basis.
Understood. And just on the other expenses, if I could just summarize, see, we've generally seen a pattern where 1Q and 2Q are much lower on other expenses as a percent of sales. But year-end, for the last 4-5 years, we've always ended up with 30-31%. This time around, it's 24.8% for the quarter. Shall we, see a similar run rate of 30-31% for the full year again?
So, Ashish, one is that, as we said, there is a there's a cost rationalization and cost optimization happening across geographies. As we enter into Q3 and Q4, that is a critical period where respiratory products sell significantly in emerging markets, including India.
Okay.
So as Ganesh mentioned, that there will be some increase in other expenditure, but that will go in line with sales.
Okay. So we are expecting a reduction in the other expenses of percentage of sales this year, definitely, on the basis of this trend for the first half?
Yes. So on a full year basis, we are expecting a reduction in other expenditure as a percentage to sales.
Right. That's good to know.
And also, as Jason mentioned, also R&D in absolute terms, right, will be lower this year compared to last year. Okay.
Okay. If you could quantify that.
So last year we spent about 1,200 and around 1,300 crores in R&D. What Glenn was mentioning is that in absolute numbers, R&D expenditure will be lower.
1150.
Lower than this year.
Okay, 1150 is it?
No, I mean, we can't give a specific number, but
okay.
it'll definitely be significantly lower.
Thank you. And Velcol, what are your expectations?
Sorry, Ashish, you know, there's a long queue, but we'll take the last question quickly.
Yeah, Velcol, what are the expectations of launch timeline? Just that.
I mean, we have no visibility right now, so it's hard to say when we launch. But we are hoping to be among the first wave of launches for Velcol.
So definitely this year is likely, right? FY18?
There's a possibility, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you so much and wish you all the best.
Thank you. Anyone who has a question may press star and one. Our next question is from the line of Shyam Srinivasan from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my question. Just looking at your gross margins for the quarter, they've sequentially come off. Is it a function of price erosion and the generic ZTI opportunity being smaller? How should one look at that number? And on a go-forward basis, in the past, I remember we have talked about a 70% gross profit, gross margin number. Should we be taking that lower now?
Yeah, so you're right, Shyam, in a way you answered the question itself that ZTI in the first quarter resulted in a high GC. Also, the other thing that you want to also keep in mind is that the in the base business, the excise component is there. So that has also had some impact on the GC because the sales number is much lower, it's less than excise. But mm-hmm. going ahead, from these numbers, there should be some kind of improvement.
So you're saying north of 66%. It should be higher, you're saying?
That's
right. Yeah.
Okay. My second question is on the India sales. We had higher double digit in last quarter. Now we have about 8%. So just trying to see how one should think about India business. Has this something changed? You had a lesser impact of GST versus peers last quarter. Something has caught up this quarter?
Yeah, obviously there is a catch up. So, I mean, GST, at an overall level has impacted. And the industry, if you see the IMS numbers, right, the recovery has been very slow.
Mm-hmm.
So even the September growth numbers have not been that encouraging, right, from an overall industry perspective, right? While the growth is positive, it's still nowhere where it used to be, right?
So how long do you think the inventory levels will come back to like pre-GST, or do you think that will come at all?
I mean, I think we had a strong Q1, right, despite the GST. So I think there was some amount of inventory there, but I think overall the demand line itself is taking time to come back, right? And IMS reports the demand line, not the inventory level. So I think that's another challenge. So we are hoping October will be a better quarter overall, and hopefully over these next 6 months the Indian business should start coming back, the whole pharmaceutical market, right?
Thanks. And my last question is on the respiratory portfolio, especially in Europe. Are you on track for the Ceylon product that you actually in-licensed? Are we on track generally on the respiratory portfolio in Europe?
I think we've got some positive feedback from the agencies. So we're hoping that we should see our first round of approvals for Salmex, right, which is the Ceylon product, right, hopefully by the end of this year, right, we should see our first round of approvals coming through.
Great. Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. Anyone who has a question may press star and one. Our next question is from the line of Kartik Mehta from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Just trying to understand your assumption of the U.S. generic market. A few of your Indian peers believe pricing in the U.S., at least in the base portfolio, seem to be bottoming. A large U.S. company last night talking about escalation being sustained. You are also talking about it. If I have to look on FY19 basis, would you believe that FY19 over FY18 for the U.S. business on the base portfolio, the erosion will be mid-single digit, or would you not want to, or would you assume there can be some other event which will keep it at this level? This is a very broader one. If you can answer that, Glenn. Yeah, thanks.
Well, our perspective is, at least for the next couple of years, right, they will continue. You will continue to see pricing pressure in the U.S. I mean, the range is hard to predict, but, you know, we are not seeing a significant improvement in the U.S. pricing environment in the near term.
And is this a uniform, or is it in some pockets of product, or is it when you are in contracts with a few guys? I mean, how is it? Because it is all over the place as of now, if you have to look at it.
I think, Bob, go ahead.
Yeah, sure. I think we, in different parts of the portfolio, we definitely see different rates. I mean, in, you know, the oral solid dosage forms will tend to be a bit higher than, for example, the derm portfolio. And, I mean, I think it's pretty closely correlated to the number of competitors in each of the molecules, basically.
Second one was on the R&D. So in terms of the R&D cost being maybe lower in FY18 over FY17, is it to do with some particular products, or are we dealing some of the NDAs that we would have to file? So how do we look at this? And also, if you could talk about this on an FY19 basis for R&D cost.
Well, I think, if you remember, right, our commentary, we've clearly said that last year we spent, a significant amount of capital on running the phase 3 for GSP301, right?
Yes. Yes.
And that took up our R&D cost quite significantly, right? If you strip that out, this year we don't have those costs, right? So automatically the R&D cost, the R&D numbers are coming off very significantly just on account of that one event, you know, right? So we don't have any active phase 3 ongoing, right? The minute we have a large-scale phase 3 trial, you're going to see R&D costs going up.
And can you give a comment for your FY19, FY20 R&D? I
still think FY19 and 20 will be in the 12 to 13% range, right? So we'll make sure we keep it at that.
And again, well, absolute amount would be higher.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
So the percentage is likely to be 20%.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. Anyone who has a question may press star and one. Our next question is from the line of Nishant Chandra from Temasek. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for this. What would be the conversion price for the convertible security that was issued last year?
So, Nishant, the conversion price will be the... the average price in the last 45 days from November 30th or 860, whatever is higher.
Okay, got it. And secondly, just on Anubhav's question, can you just take me through the EBITDA to cash flow bridge for this quarter?
Yeah. So on the at this quarter, EBITDA is about 388 crore. In terms of taxes, it's in the range of about 50-60 crores. Cash interest is about 45 crores. Then if you look at asset purchase,
Asset is around 260,
yeah,
260 crores, and you have
260 crores.
Working capital, you have an increase of about 70 crores. And then you have a Texas payment, which we have, which is to the extent of around 25 crores.
Okay, got it. Thanks. Yeah.
Thank
That's
you.
It from.
Anyone who has a question may press star and one. Our next question is from the line of Sayan Mukherjee from Nomura Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, good morning. You know, this Europe growth, the strong growth you're seeing, how sustainable is that? You mentioned it will grow further. Is it possible to give some color as to what is driving that?
Well, I think, Shyam, we have a number of new products which are launched in Europe, right? Maloff is one of them. As we said, right, Q4 we expect, you know, to start seeing approvals for Salmex, right, the Ceylon product. And from there on, next year, you should see a number of approvals. So I think overall, you know, Europe continues to be strong, right? And we have a number of new product launches coming through in Q3 also. So we should see strong numbers coming out of Europe.
Okay. Okay. And in Russia, you mentioned, you know, there has been a decline because of one product. Was this a significant contributor? And then, you know, how should we think about, like, going forward, or this growth would remain slow for some time?
I mean, I think full year, the Russian business, we are expecting, you know, the rest of the world markets to come back, right? So full year, you should see some growth coming out of the rest of the market. So we are expecting a stronger Q3, Q4, and that's mainly because of the Ascoril effect, right, in Russia, right, where you got the Russian winters kicking in. So I think full year we should expect, you know, close to about 14-15% growth coming out of the rest of the world.
Okay. And finally, Glenn, on the U.S., you know, the thing is, you know, there's been talk about more transparency for some products where there's no competition or less competition. How does that helping you? I mean, over the last 3 months, 4 months, do you feel better in terms of or the visibility? Of course, you can't predict precisely. But would you say the chances of approvals have increased, or any commentary on that, on specific products like Velcol, Voltaren, et cetera?
Well, clearly, I mean, we've seen the agency accelerating approvals, right, for limited competition products. So there, automatically, you know, you would anticipate that, you know, the likelihood of getting limited competition approvals, right, is much higher. So we've seen a couple of them, right? So we saw Apripatant, which is a good product, and nitroglycerin, right, towards the end of last quarter, right? So that will continue to drive it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, can you give a number, Glenn, like how many such products we should, you know, expect this year approximately?
And we think at least 4 or 5 more products we should get approval on, which are all limited competition.
Okay. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thank you. Anyone with a question may press star and one. Our next question is from the line of Sameer Baisiwala from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. A little unconventional question, Bob, for you maybe. In doing your normal course of business in the U.S., does your salespeople need to talk to the salespeople of your competitors?
I mean,
Sameer, I think it's going to be difficult to take questions like this on over the call.
Jisha, it's a little important because, and I don't want to go into the court case, etc. But it's a very general question that when you are conducting your business in the U.S. Why do your salespeople need to talk to Teva or to Sun Pharma or other salespeople? And do you guys do that as a normal practice?
No, I think, again, it's very difficult to comment on this question. I mean, you know, we have an ongoing litigation going on, and we wouldn't be able to take any questions directly or indirectly in this regard.
Okay, fine. Okay. But I thought it was a very general question.
No, sorry about that. Thanks.
Okay, no problem. And a couple of more questions. One is on the cost cutting, Glenn, if you can share some light, which are those elements that you are taking out?
So we've got a bunch of things, right? We've got inventory as one of the areas. We've got SG&A as another area. We're also looking at, procurement to impact the GC. So I think there's a bunch of different initiatives we've got going on with different consulting firms, right, who are working with us, right, to help on the costing cost side. So that impact will come in. Some of it is coming in this year, and I think even next year you should see some significant improvement in the overall cost structure.
Okay, and this is helpful. But Glenn, because it's a large number that you have taken out, so within SG&A, which are those elements, if a couple of broad categories you can mention?
So we are looking at each and every line item, as you said, from the R&D side to travel, admin, we are looking at marketing and promotion. So we are studying each and every initiative. And currently we have three operational excellence initiatives going on, which Glenn mentioned, some of which has already gained some, got us some benefit in this quarter. And we can see this benefit continuing at least for the next 18 months.
Okay, and just final question, for the CapEx that you've done in the quarter and what's ongoing, which are specific sites and locations where you're spending this?
On the CapEx number, which is the fixed assets addition, around 30% of that is primarily on maintenance CapEx. The remaining CapEx is going in sites, which is namely expansion in Indore. We have some small expansion happening in Monroe. And we have expansion happening in Sikkim and Aurangabad facility.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone who has a question may press star and one. Our next question is from the line of Nitin Agarwal from IDFC Securities. Please go ahead.
Thanks for taking my question. Glenn, on the cost-cutting exercise, just going back to the question, I mean, is there a number that you, with your consultants, have arrived at in terms of the potential cost savings that can be taken out from the system, say, over the next, 2 to 3 years?
So, Nitin, we can't share that number, right? There are numbers which we have, but we can't share it right now.
Okay, but in terms of, the impact, you see that playing, as you mentioned, so the bulk of it will come through, so how should we look at it? The bulk of it is going to come through this year, and it's going to be like a reducing number going forward, or the bulk of it essentially yet to come where we are in the whole exercise?
I think part of it will come this year, but I think a big part will also come in next year.
Okay. And secondly, on the U.S. business, with the way the changes have been happening in the market over the last couple of years, last year in particular, have you sort of undertaken any tweak on your U.S. generic strategy? Any changes that you've made in the way you're looking at the U.S. business from an R&D perspective?
Well, I think, we've made some changes, Nitin, in terms of at the strategic level as to, which products we need to invest in and which we don't. The bulk of our focus now is obviously on these limited competition products, and that's where those are the products we're actually going after.
Okay. And lastly, on a balance sheet perspective, is there a target? How are we looking at essentially our debt positions, our debt levels? So say if we take a 2 to 3 year view on the business, what are the aspirations or the target that we're running with on that?
I mean, clearly, we are targeting to reduce 300 crores, right, this year. And from here on, every year, if we keep knocking down 300 crores in both, at the net debt level, and some amount at the gross debt level, I think we should be fine.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone who has a question may press star and one. Our next question is from the line of Chirag Dagli from HDFC Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Yes, sir. Thank you for the opportunity. So what is the adjustment to sales for GST on the India business?
The impact is about 3%.
3%, right. And sir, this line item, purchase of stock in trade, this is a very volatile line item across quarters. Can you just, tell us what's going on here in a sense that, across quarters, this is very volatile as a percentage of sales.
Sorry, can you just repeat that?
Sir, this purchase of finished goods, right, this
yeah.
part.
Yeah, we'll have to look at that, Chirag. Can't, we don't have the answer as of now. It's part of the result sheet, but let
no
us get
problem,
back
sir.
To you on that.
No problem. And so the staff cost, so 110 crores, which is a one-off that you're alluding to, what is the exact nature of this? Is this like a one-time bonus?
Yeah, this is the, see, we give our increases, increments in the second quarter and also give out our variable pays and bonuses. So this amount is only pertaining to the variable pay and bonuses. Thus, the increments will continue for the remaining three quarters.
But it is, this is normal course of business. No
yeah,
business.
Normal course of business. If you see, it's there last year also.
So last year, what was the amount?
If you see the percentage sales, percentage increase in employee cost is about 9 or 10%. I don't have the exact variable pay bonuses amount, but it would be definitely much lesser than, it would be slightly lesser than 110 crores.
So last year also we paid out some bonuses?
Correct.
Okay, so then this is not a one-off in some, in that sense. Okay, sir. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We'll take a last question from the line of Surjit Pal from Prabhudas Liladhar. Please go ahead.
Thanks. For major part of
Mr. Pal, I'm sorry, we're not able to hear you that well.
Hello?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Thanks for doing the questions, and I think almost everything is done. Except one thing, your cash tax rate, you said your cash tax outflow is on 180 crore, which is roughly around 66% of the PBT, right?
Sorry, can you repeat that question?
Your cash tax outflow?
Yes, we said it's 180, yeah, correct.
So that means it is roughly around 66% of PBT, right?
Yeah, so what we are saying is that the focus clearly in cash tax is to get it down as a percentage to PBT, and also in absolute terms, if you look at it last year, the cash tax was close to 700 crores, and this year we feel that the cash tax will substantially come down.
And that is mainly because of?
Because of various tax initiatives that we have ran in the past, which is now coming to fruition.
On a full year basis, we should see cash tax which is less than 20%.
For FY18.
Yeah.
So reported tax is what we're guiding to, and reported tax should be in the range of 25%.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. I now hand the floor back to Mr. Jason D'Souza for closing comments. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Inba. Before we close the call, just wanted to read out the disclaimer that this document and call was organized by Glenmark Pharmaceutical Limited. The information statement and analysis made during this call describing the company's objectives, projections and estimates are forward-looking statements and progressive within the meanings of applicable security laws and regulation. The analysis contained herein is based on numerous assumptions. Actual results may vary from those expressed or implied depending upon economic conditions, government policies and other incidental factors. No representation or warranty either expressed or implied is provided in relation to this presentation. This presentation should not be regarded by recipients as a substitute for the exercise of their own judgment. With this, we end Glenmark's Q2 earnings call. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, members of the management. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Glenmark Pharmaceuticals Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.